Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Say hello to Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise, I don't know if you heard, but Steve Ruxton just a moment ago was talking about, I know one of the stories that caught your eye, that a majority of parents spend 20% or more of their household income on child care. I don't know that that number shocked me, because what else are we spending our money on but our family and our kids?
Well, there was another number that came out, I think last week or so, maybe a couple of weeks ago, that said that it's now costing over or around $60,000 a year to raise your kids. And that number has just gone up so dramatically. But again, part of it is, you know, how old your kids are and if they're in some sort of child care situation where you actually have to be paying that much money for your kids. And what parents have found is that once you have more than one, you know, if you get into two, well, then it starts to make sense to have one of the parents stay home full time, unless you're lucky enough to have somebody else in the family who's able to help out.
It's funny how many grandparents are helping that way. And I would imagine that some of these places would give you a discount on the second child, but I don't know what my son and daughter-in-law are paying for childcare, but I know it's a lot. I know it's a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure they give much of a discount, if anything, believe it or not.
Really?
And then you've got some childcare centers, you have to sign up almost the day your child is born, even though they're not going to go there for maybe, you know, 6 months to a year, or maybe even a couple of years. And then there's a non-refundable waitlist fee that can be $75, $100. There's a new child enrollment fee that could be $100 to $600. And then, of course, there's other kinds of materials that you need to bring with you, you know, every year. You know, kind of like the school supplies. You've got to keep those child care centers, I guess, fully stocked with paper and pencils and crayons and whatever else they're asking for. Mm.
I also think if your child is sick and can't go that day, I think you still pay for that day, mm-hmm. because that was a day for which they were providing service. You didn't avail yourself of it, but they have their costs, is my understanding.
That's correct.
And those are coveted places. If you get a good one that's convenient and it's a positive experience for the kids, there's no price some parents won't pay that can afford it.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I think we're seeing, you know, again, I know Michael Bloomberg came out and said, hey, everybody in Washington, get back to work this week, and, you know, the government needs you. But a lot of parents are saying, you know, this really helps, because if I don't have to commute from the city, I can actually pick up my kid at the end of that day, and then I don't have to pay for after child care. So even if you're sending, you know, kids to full day kindergarten, which you know, Governor Pritzker has just signed into law for the state of Illinois, starting, I think, in 2026 and 2027, a lot of parents have to pay for pre-care and aftercare, pre-kindergarten, after kindergarten, simply because by the time they get home from work, it's past 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon when you have to pick up your kid. And so there's lots of other expenses that go into this child care beyond even just, you know, sort of baby care, or, you know, when they're toddlers.
Talk to me about the Home Purchase Sentiment Index. What even is that?
Well, Fannie Mae, which is sort of the big Goliath in the secondary mortgage market, takes a look every month at how people are feeling about buying a home. Is their consumer confidence or home buyer confidence increasing, or is it decreasing? And so they report on this, and they look at things like job security and how people's finances are doing. And so if you look over, you know, the last, I don't know, bunches of years, what you see is that overall the trend line was that consumer confidence and the home purchase sentiment index was going up. And then we had a huge dive down when we had the pandemic. And it's kind of not come back. It's, you know, it kind of hit its high just before the pandemic started in 2020, end of 2019 and into 2020. And because of higher interest rates and dramatically high costs, we've seen that people are a little less than encouraged about their going out and, you know, in buying a house. 82% of consumers still think it's a bad time to buy a house. That's not so great.
How recently was this survey completed?
It's every month. This one was for July.
Wow.
It just came out.
Pretty fresh, yeah.
It is fresh. And the overall, though, I mean, this was a positive that came out of it. The percentage of people who responded to the survey said that their household income is significantly higher than it was is still about 20%. So people are feeling a little bit more encouraged about their household income. It's just that a larger number of them think that buying a home is just out of reach.
Yeah, bad time to buy a house, good time to sell a house. Lisa, let's talk a little bit about AI. Can you just catch me up on what I'm reading here?
So it's every single day there is a little thing that goes into my inbox listing all the new AI tools and things that are coming out. And I got to say, John, I'm just overwhelmed, like everybody else is, by how fast this technology is developing. Last week, for example, I learned that somebody can go to my YouTube channel, which is Expert Real Estate Tips. They can take images of all of my videos from 10 years ago, and they can make new videos that make it look like I'm doing a video a day that's completely brand new. All AI, I don't even have to be involved.
You don't have to move. You don't have to do anything.
I don't have to do anything. Apparently, all I have to do is put in the topic, and it writes the script. It would create the video of me, and it would create audio from my voice.
And it would be based on a screen, grab a picture of you, and then they would animate your lips and eyes and everything, huh?
Even beyond that, it's my movements. I could be walking. I will look like I'm literally moving through this video, which is pretty scary if you think about the implications coming up in this year's election cycle. If we take all of that and move that up a little bit, I'm worried about it. But today's note came in, and AI can now steal your data by listening to the way that you type on your keyboard.
Talk to me about that.
So researchers at Cornell University developed a technique that allows an AI program to listen to the keyboard sound. It has a 93% accuracy. I was testing this out earlier, and to me, tapping on a keyboard sounds exactly the same, whether I'm typing a W or an L or a number. But to AI, it can train the AI model to listen to how you actually do that, and it can identify patterns, and then it translates that into actual text.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was thinking, I wonder, like, okay, I've got a keyboard in front of me. this isn't going to work, but I'm going to type for you. What did I say?
I'm hoping you said I-L-Y-C-E, my name. Did you?
No, but these are all, no, but this is T-H-E. I can do T-H-E really fast. Kind of proud of that. But I mean, how would it know? That's crazy, because there's no sound that comes off your keyboard. So how would it, and the keys all generate the same clicking sound. It can tell?
It can tell. And it's at like 93 to 95% accuracy. And they can get the information they need when you're using Zoom. So I was thinking about Zoom. I take notes when I'm on a Zoom call sometimes. You know, journalists will do that, but other people do as well. And so if somebody's recording you and you happen to, you know, not that you would ever lose focus during a Zoom call and start doing something else.
Right.
But if you did and you typed in a password, it could pick up sensitive information like passwords or even, you know, discussions that you're texting to somebody behind the scenes during a call.
Oh.
And it could be very, very dangerous. So researchers at Cornell University warn people about this. This is a new threat that we've never faced before, folks. Change your typing style. Use noise-producing software to cover and mask the sound of that. And consider biometric authentication or password managers and two-factor authentication, just to make sure nobody's picking up something you wouldn't want them to pick up.
So if during a Zoom meeting, you and I are using Zoom chat and you and I are typing back and forth and I go, this guy's a dork, what a waste of time. And hey, how about the Cubs game last night? They could go back and hear the sound of my clicking and tell what I was doing, which is a real waste of their time, by the way. But I mean, okay, suppose for a criminal case or national security, they needed to know what people were saying. They could possibly go back and get that. Wow.
Well, I think it's even more to the point that let's say you just you're bored on a Zoom call and you decide to pay some bills and you log into your credit card account and now you've typed in your password. That, I think, is even more of a concern.
The agency Fitch downgraded the United States. Why?
Yeah, well, it turns out that it happened about a week after Treasury announced, kind of quietly, I would say, because I missed this. Maybe your crack team in the WGN newsroom did not. But Treasury announced how much it would need to do the quarterly refunding, and the expected borrowing for July to September, Q3, was $1 trillion. And that was up by almost a quarter of a trillion from the previous quarter. And so Fitch responded by saying, this is a nightmare. I mean, you're basically talking about, and I had sent you a number, it was completely wrong, so I'm glad you didn't read it. But what they're looking at, unless my calculator is wrong, they're looking at needing $77 billion a week or $11 billion a day to fund the government.
And
that's a huge number, John.
Yeah. I don't need to contextualize that. I am out of time. That's Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Click on thinkglink.com for more insight like this. Okay, Elise, thanks for your help today.
You bet, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. On Mondays, we often visit with Jim Dahlke from American Inno. He's the national editor there with some Chicago tech stories, kind of on the food front today. Jim, let's start with Grubhub. What's the story there?
Hey, John. Yeah, so Grubhub, of course, the Chicago food delivery company, homegrown startup story born out of the University of Chicago, of course, known now across the world. They have partnered with another local Chicago business called The Hatchery. And The Hatchery is a really interesting business in Chicago. It is kind of a vital player in the food startup space. So The Hatchery is a startup incubator and workspace, really kind of providing the necessary tools and equipment that food entrepreneurs need to get their products off the ground. So this is, you know, kitchen space and all the kinds of equipment you might need to, you know, to build a new food startup. And so Grubhub is partnering with the incubator here at The Hatchery to help entrepreneurs there, really particularly on the west side of the city, to help build their businesses. And so what they're doing is there's a donation that they're providing about $300,000 into The Hatchery, but they're also helping provide their resources at Grubhub to give entrepreneurs the ability to really open up their businesses to delivery. A lot of these businesses, maybe started pre-COVID, and a lot of their revenue went down the drain, right? There were a lot of these catering businesses, especially on the west side there, that The Hatchery says they provide resources to that really needed access and more tools to help onboard to services like Grubhub. So really interesting Chicago partnership here as Grubhub looks to help entrepreneurs. And hey, it's only going to give more resources to entrepreneurs in Chicago in the food space.
Your Alex Zorn wrote about one of the businesses. The taco shop seats 10 people. 10 people expect 60% of its total business to come from the Grubhub app. I'm surprised. I didn't realize how vital. I knew it was a big deal. In fact, that's why it was controversial when people started to get upset about the fees, but I didn't realize how vital it would be to some of these businesses.
That's exactly right. And Grubhub has indeed had a bit of a love-hate relationship with, the restaurant industry, right, because of the fees that they are taking. And I think that Grubhub is working to sort of resolve some of those issues. But certainly it's a big issue, especially as COVID happened, right? And, you weren't able to have a lot of in-dining opportunities, and restaurants really relied on that food delivery aspect. And so, hey, when they're taking a huge cut, from the delivery there, when that's your only revenue stream, it's a tricky situation.
Egg Life Foods is in your news today, too. What's that?
Yeah, speaking of Chicago food startups, Egg Life Foods, newish business started in late 2019, so just before the pandemic. They're a startup that makes wraps made mostly out of eggs instead of flour. So really, this is a big protein play to take the flour out of your wrap and to replace it with eggs. They just landed a real big deal, a national distribution deal with Whole Foods. So just to kind of show you the scale of what it means to land a deal with Whole Foods. Just a few years ago, the company says it was in a few hundred stores, and now with the Whole Foods deal, they're going to be in over 12,000 stores now with the Whole Foods partnership. And so kind of what that means from a revenue standpoint, a couple years ago, they were doing about $4 million in revenue. Egg Life says that it's going to bump their revenue to about $40 million. So that's over just 3 years. So a pretty big jump there in revenue. And obviously, you know, Whole Foods is a big opportunity for lots of startups. We've seen, you know, many kind of food startups come through Chicago and land a deal with Whole Foods and really kind of see their growth skyrocket. So, yeah, great, interesting deal from a Chicago food startup.
And describe this thing, this substitute for flour. It's going to be a wrap like I would put meat and cheese in, like a taco sort of thing?
That's exactly right. So they've got two flavors. They've got an original wrap and everything bagel flavored wrap. And yeah, these are made with egg whites. And so they got about 5 grams, 6 grams of protein, just 25 calories and no carbs and no saturated fat. So really interesting. The CEO of this startup was previously the chief marketing officer over at Miller Coors, and says that he really believes in this business and thinks that they've got an opportunity here to really grow as people look to continue to increase the amount of protein and maybe take out some of the flours and starches from their diet.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's a lot of people. One last thing about that. Is that in stores now, though? I mean, can I go to – it says here they will sell Egg Life's original and everything Babel Rack flavors near the hummus dips and spreads at the Whole Foods stores, but – it's not there yet then?
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to check your local store. It should be right around the corner. So if it's not there now, it should be there soon. So I'm not sure on the exact timetable there, but with an announcement like this, it's usually incoming shortly.
Let's do something digital. Talk about Augmedics.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about Augmedics a little bit. I mean, this is really a story, I think, of the state of startups in 2023. So Augmedics here, in the news recently, after raising about $83 million in a new fundraising round, that's a big chunk of change, especially in Chicago and especially in the year 2023. And so what Augmedics does is they're a healthcare company. They do augmented reality for surgeons, essentially giving surgeons what it says is quote-unquote X-ray vision during spinal surgery. So, you know, really, impressive sort of visual technology that they're able to put over their masks and kind of give them extra insights into the surgery while they're in the middle of, you know, working on somebody's spine. Augmedics was able to acquire some technology from a competitor that went through Chapter 11. So this is a competitor by the name of Surgalign. They went through Chapter 11 in Texas, and Augmedics was able to acquire some of their software for just, really pennies on the dollar. And I think it's really kind of an example, right, of what we're seeing nationally. We're seeing lots of companies struggle, lots of tech firms, valuations have plummeted, and they're really struggling to raise funding. And we're, experts have told us to expect more startup failures, more tech failures in the back half of the year. But what that means is, for companies who are doing well, for tech firms, for startups that are well capitalized, they're doing well, this is an opportunity to grow even faster. So it's really kind of a tale of the have and have nots as companies like Augmedics are able to make deals and acquire technology, acquire, parts of businesses they otherwise really wouldn't be able to. Kind of indicative of this, just last week, a big new fund was announced from investment giant Brookfield and Sequoia Heritage. They raised actually a new fund specifically to do this, to buy struggling startups that raised venture capital and their valuations have gone way down. And hey, look, if you're a struggling startup and you need, to return some capital to investors and you can't go raise traditional capital, M&A might be the only way to do that. And what we're seeing right now is that, some companies are going for pennies on the dollar.
Hmm. That's interesting. So it's kind of like an angel investor for the failed angel investments a little bit, huh?
A little bit. Like I said, this is, an opportunity for, those businesses that are doing well to kind of swoop in here and acquire technology for a lot less than you might have to, a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno. Click on ChicagoInno.com and read more. Nice to talk to you, Jim.
Thanks, John.
More business news now. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. There's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's a new national distribution deal for a Chicago startup that makes wraps using mostly eggs instead of flour. Egg Life Foods has reached an agreement with Whole Foods Market to expand its availability in stores. The company launched in 2019 and had 4,500 locations at the end of 2022. That number will grow significantly with the Whole Foods deal. The retailer will sell Egg Life's original and everything bagel-flavored wraps near the hummus, dips, and spreads display in Whole Foods stores. Chicago Inno reports more growth for Egg Life is expected in 2024. Commercial real estate firm Jones Lang LaSalle has developed its own artificial intelligence model. They're calling it JLLGPT, and the chatbot will be able to answer questions and generate text on a range of commercial real estate topics. The AI has been trained exclusively with the company's own data. Among other things, it'll allow Jones employees to quickly obtain market information and data that previously required extensive research. The model was developed at the Chicago-based company's tech research arm in San Francisco. I'm Steve Grudanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food on WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Alexander's away today. Lindsay Tobin is in with the business of food, sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Agriculture is the largest employer in the world, offering many opportunities on and off the farm. Programs such as FFA encourages students to become thought leaders, regardless of the career path they choose.
The leadership that the kids are gaining is just beyond what they even realize.
Guided by their mission to lead, discover, and innovate, this FFA Farm Squad will compare quality and yield results from multiple seed varieties grown under the same conditions.
Assign different kids on the team to contact different seed providers and ask them to donate seed. Along with that, we also had to come out here and decide what we wanted to do with the field, how we're going to split it, and how many varieties we think we would need.
With 20 acres of soybeans and 20 acres of corn to manage, volunteer advisors work diligently with these students to develop critical business skills necessary for success in today's world.
Kids are going to figure out break-even costs. So we're going to look at what seed cost is, what the fertilizer costs. That's when the light bulb turns on.
Students sharpen their communication and leadership skills by calling and working with local agronomists to determine the best business plan for their acreage.
We were calling all of these seed reps, and I was like, okay, you're going to ask him for three different varieties of corn and three different varieties for beans. And he did really, really, really well. And just seeing how well these kids can communicate, it really just kind of gave me chills when I was watching them. I was like, wow, this is that's stuff I do every day. Like, these kids could do it.
With the business of food, I'm Lindsay Tobin for WGN.
How about this? They say, this is according to a study of 140 U.S. companies by Accenture, businesses that actively employ people with disabilities generate 28% higher average reviews than those that did not. If you hire people with disabilities, 28% higher reviews online. Margins were 30% above non-disabled workplaces. And employees with disabilities who are happy in their jobs are likely to stay in those positions longer than non-disabled peers. There is an organization in the Chicago area called Keshet, and they've launched three new vocational summer camps to serve teens and young adults with disabilities. Jen Phillips is the executive director. Jen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here this morning.
I guess you knew all of those statistics I just mentioned, huh?
I do, and they're really true. And we've noticed throughout the many, many years of our young adults working in jobs, and now they're adults themselves. They're the ones who show up to work every day. They're the ones who have been at their jobs the longest, and that people rely on them because they know they're going to be there and do the job right.
So are you an agency, not a temp agency, but a hiring agency?
So we're actually a non-for-profit organization serving individuals with disabilities from the age of 3 to now forever. So we have camp programs and therapeutic day schools and adult day programs and now residential homes. And so we've watched all of our kids grow up into young adults, and, you know, everyone wants meaningful work, and everyone wants to have a job and feel like they are part of something and doing something and receiving a paycheck. And so as our kids have grown up, and especially in our camp programs, they saw their peers getting jobs, and they wanted jobs too at camp. And so this is kind of how this all came to fruition about a couple of years ago, really talking about, you know, we help our adults get jobs in the community, but why don't we help our campers who grew up at camp actually get jobs at camp with their peers?
What kind of disabilities are we talking?
Most of our individuals are individuals who have intellectual disabilities, developmental disabilities, some on the autism spectrum, but all types of disabilities.
And what kind of work are you able to find them?
So in our camps, just like other staff work at camps, there's jobs being counselors. Some of our young adults work in the art center, or they work in the office, or they're taking pictures around camp. So there's multiple jobs that they can do. We even have some of our adults working up at an overnight camp in Wisconsin. We are so lucky to have a partnership with JCC of Chicago. And they have a camp up in Wisconsin that our adults work at. So they're working in the kitchen, or they're helping in the office. They're out at camp helping with high ropes course, or even down at the pool and doing different jobs around camp, just like any young adult would be doing at camp.
Do you imagine finding jobs for them outside of your own structure and the camps, but in the marketplace in general?
I mean, that's the whole point, right? For us to be able to give them the training that they need vocationally, to try out different jobs, really look at what they like, and also build their confidence and their skill sets and be able to work along other people. And so, you know, just as they are aging out of, you know, working at camp or being in school, that they're going to be able to go out into the world and get a job. And we have noticed, even throughout the many years of us providing these vocational training opportunities, that there is a higher statistic that they will be able to get a job and keep a job when they leave some of these pre-vocational opportunities at camp. And one of the things we were able to do this summer was pay our staff for working at camp, right? Just like their peers are being paid to work at camp, we were able to have them be paid at camp. And so getting their first paychecks and being proud of what they're doing, it has been transformative. We know, we've seen some of these young kids grow up in our camps, and now they're young adults, and to see where they are now, and also with the support of a very loving community, right? Our camp community is a place where they have been for many years, and so they're with their peers working at camp, and they feel safe. And this has given them not only that confidence, right, but they've given them meaning. And we have noticed this has been something that will last a lifetime, right, these experiences, and help them get jobs out of camp.
What can we do for you, Jen?
Well, you know, one of the things that's important is for us to tell the world, right, that we should hire people who have disabilities, that we should be open to making sure that we give everyone the chance to apply for a job. And even though you may need to make some accommodations, or you may need to look at jobs in a different way, these are meaningful jobs, and our adults are doing real work. And so I always say, in order for us to create this community that we all support each other, is hire people with disabilities, right? And, you know, we need the support from the community to always be able to fund these programs. It's not it's not easy, right? Because at camp, we have to have job coaches, right? We're paying our adults, and there's a lot of staff that make this happen. It's not just a simple thing. So we're lucky to get grants, and we're lucky to get donations, and that is the only way we can continue to do what we do.
That's Jen Phillips, the executive director at Keshet.org. That's K-E-S-H-E-T. That's a Hebrew word for rainbow, I read. So Keshet.org, K-E-S-H-E-T.org. Continued success, Jen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.